my observation was that a couple of the topics in the COO group were actually highly HR specific. And I thought it would be valuable for us to carve out some time to talk about HR and just HR. So that's the purpose of this meeting. My colleague, Wendy Urig, is also on the line, and she's the director of HR here. I'm the COO, so I'm doing double duty in the COO group and the HR group, which is great. And I think our goal for today is just to hear from you all, why did you join this group, and what are you hoping to get out of it? And what topics do you want to be addressed in the future? And that can help me and Lisa build the agenda and line up speakers for future meetings.
Right.
Do you want to start with introductions maybe?
Right. I think that everyone should introduce themselves, say their agency, and I guess how large your agency is. And then the questions that you had asked, which is what you want to get out of it. And
yep.
What you'd like to see addressed. But since you're leading it, Jeff, everyone's picture looks different. So you have to call on people, because my top right is someone who's not your top right, let's say.
Understood. See what I mean? So I guess going in order, Jen Ripken is the next person in my list.
Okay. Hi, guys. I'm Jen Ripken. I'm from JESA. We're in Maryland. We have offices in Maryland and Virginia. We have about 250 employees. And then we also have a wholly owned subsidiary, which is a home care agency called Premier Home Care. I know our executive director of that program has participated in the Home Care Infinity groups as well. And they have about 250 employees as well. I'm excited to have this group. It's something I had asked for, I think, even before it was NJHSA, and I was part of the Facebook group and all that. So I'm thrilled that you guys have done this. Things I'm looking to get out of it is connecting with peers in other Jewish organizations. There's questions that sometimes come up that might be unique to our organizations. I'd love to be able to have others to connect with on that. I'm trying to get out of the weeds. We're a little short-staffed right now, so I'd like to have conversations that are more strategic in nature, but love to be able to share operational tools that are just quick things that we can share with one another. I participated in the phone call or a couple of phone calls around retention that was part of the COO group, and I joined our COO group to do that. And we shared a bunch of different tools and things for the library, which I think is helpful if others can share the same type of thing, depending on what the topic is.
Terrific.
Great. Thank you. Heather is next on my list.
Hold on, Heather. One thing that we forgot to say, I don't know if you want to talk about it now, is there any specific expertise that you or your colleagues have that you would like to share? Do we want to do that afterwards, maybe, Jeff?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll do that after. Okay, fine. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'm Heather Garrett. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for Jewish Community Service in Baltimore. I actually just joined Jewish Community Services July 1st of this year. So our organization is about 250 employees. And I'm looking to connect with peers and colleagues, gain information. This is actually my first time in the nonprofit world. So I have a lot of experience in the for-profit. And as it relates to HR, I actually came from California, so I've seen everything. But I want to connect with people throughout the country and you know, find out what's working for others, especially, you know, as Jen had mentioned, similar agencies. So that's mine.
Great. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Hillary is next.
Hello, my name is Hillary Frank. I'm with JFS Metro West. We have about 63 employees. I'm also new to the organization. I head up the HR department here, which they never had before. So it's interesting. I'm putting in a lot of policies and procedures, but they've done a good job keeping up their handbook, et cetera. I work on a part-time basis for them, and I have worked in nonprofit before, as well as for-profit, worked with really labor unions, employee relations, et cetera. So I'm here because I'm from New Jersey. I'd like to hear about the community across the country and learn more about some maybe best practices and new ways of doing things and new ideas and sharing it with people of like and different minds.
Great, thanks. It looks like Alana is next on my list.
Hi, I'm Alana Corum. I'm JFS in South Palm Beach County. I've been with them as the Director of Human Resources for about 6 years now. I'm here with a colleague of mine who oversees the HR for JFS at Home, which is a home healthcare agency, Stephanie. And we're here really to get an idea of, you know, our colleagues' best practices, strategic initiatives, things like that.
So when you say South Beach, South Palm Beach, what's the name of that? Is that Albert?
It's Ruth and Norman Rails, Jewish Family Services. Rails.
Okay, just want to make sure. Yeah.
HR there, and then some of the other agencies on campus as well, the Federation, JCC, and Stephanie's here who oversees JFS at Home.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mark is next on my list.
Mark Rickless from Jewish Family Service of Clifton Passaic, New Jersey. We are a relatively small agency. We do not have a federation that supports us. We kind of go it alone. And the federation that we had disappeared about 8 years ago. And we are a rather involved in social services and therapy. And in terms of HR, they just said, hey, you, go do it. So I got thrown into this. I have no idea what's going on, but everybody's been paid since I've been in charge of payroll. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to absorb whatever I can because it's all a learning experience for me.
Great. It looks like Wendy, you're next.
Yeah. Hi. So I'm here because Jeff is my boss and he said I had to join.
That's not true.
That's not entirely true, but
you're going to be taking over chair soon.
Exactly. That's my feeling. I do have about 20 years experience in the HR world, but not with a nonprofit. So I have been with JFS Detroit for about 2 months. I just started in September. So Heather, I'm even a little bit newer than you. But I'm also interested in looking and understanding the nonprofit side as well as the Jewish community in general and, looking at best practices as we kind of rebrand our HR department at JFS.
Thanks, Wendy.
Yep.
Beth is next, I think.
Hi, I'm Beth Wynn from Jewish Family and Children's Service in Southern New Jersey. And I'm the Associate Executive Director here. I am not actually involved with HR per se, but when they gave the description, they talked about engagement. I'm very interested in learning about culture and staff retention. So I figured I would listen in and hear what you guys were chatting about.
Great. Thank you. And then another Alana.
Alana, you have to unmute yourself. There you go.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, so I'm Ilana Messas from Jewish Family and Child of Greater Toronto. So that's up in Canada. I'm interested in knowing more about this. And I'm in charge of HR here at UCS. We are a children's aid and a family service agency.
How many employees do you have in that agency?
We're 120.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks, Alana. All right, Amy, you're up.
I'm an innocent bystander. I've been at Jewish Family Service for many years in administration, and I'm sort of backing up the expertise that Wendy has.
Thank you, Amy. So Amy and I are in a pretty cool club here at Jewish Family Service, former board members who subsequently joined as staff members. In her many years here, Amy has been the chief development officer, the chief administrative officer, the chair of the board. She shovels the snow sometimes. There's nothing she can't do. And I've been with JFS for just about a year and a half. I come from a for-profit background as well. like Wendy, so we're both learning. And JFS Detroit has approximately 120 people, 100 FTEs, and about a $12 million budget.
Okay. Is there anyone else that hasn't come on to introduce themselves? No.
So, Charlize, are you taking notes or you want me to?
Who, me? I'm writing down. Yeah, I'm writing down stuff.
Okay. Need. Then I'll stop.
Okay, yes. So what I am asking, though, now is, like, Jen and Alana, Stephanie, Hillary, if you guys need web cameras for the next call, let me know, and I'll see if we still have money left so that we can get them to you in the fund. If not, I encourage you to buy them on your own. I just wanted to say that because it's so much more intimate, as it were, I guess, or you get to personal if we can see you as well. So that's my plug for cameras. So we know what everyone wants to get out of it, retention and engagement and culture. And I guess we can have different sessions. There are only 4 sessions a year for the HR group on these different topics. We didn't know if anyone here felt that they had specific expertise in any of those topics that they would want to, you know, talk about at our next meeting. If you do, you can always, oh, Ilana's here. You can always just email us and let us know. Otherwise, you know, this is an open forum for people to talk about, you know, what they're struggling with, what they're, you know, having successes with. You know, anyone can take it from there.
So I'll start. We're just about to launch a what I'll call compensation study, but it's more than just compensation. It's also benchmarking, like, how many FTEs do we need? How many do we have? Is 2 the right number of HR people? Is 3 the right number of IT people? Is 5 the right number of accountants? Like, you know we have a certain number of widgets to make, but we don't really have any idea how many people we need. And everybody feels busy, but we're looking for some more quantitative measures of how productive are our case managers, and do they have caseloads that are too big, too small, just right? So I'm curious, have any of you done that work? And if you have, did you get insights that were actionable? And if so, did you implement them?
Are you thinking just for back office positions, or are you thinking for direct service positions as well?
Both, yeah, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, selfishly, I'm more focused on back office, but I think it's important for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think we struggle with the back office positions within our organization as well. I mean, for HR, I think we've generally used the ratio of 1 to 100 employees, but I will tell you, even with what we have in terms of HR staff, it feels like we're strapped to be able to do anything new. We've been growing quite a bit over the last several years, and I'd say our employees are fairly needy. So there's a lot of hand-holding that goes on, but we use, like I said, typically 1 to 100 as the ratio for people who are tactically handling those types of things. For our direct service staff, we have different, whether we call it productivity or utilization, it just depends on the program, but we have different requirements that we've put in, and it relates to the budget in terms of what we're trying to get done. And we've taken a look at outside groups to see. So we have a hospice program, for instance. We know what we're basing a caseload on, and so then we staff that accordingly. For our mental health therapist, we're looking at the outside market and what seems reasonable in terms of the number of sessions or activities that a therapist can provide, and then we base their utilization on that. We try to hold them accountable to what their utilization looks like, and then we budget based on those numbers. Mm-hmm. And so we just do that in our other departments as well. I think for like accounting or marketing or some of those other things, it's a little more challenging to figure out exactly what we need.
And for those productivity measures, were you looking at like social work, industry data, or how did you come up with those measures?
So yes, I mean, some of it's social work industry data. So as an agency, you know, we're not a private practice where you sort of eat what you kill in that way, although we do have that role for people who want to work just in that capacity. But we look at what we're getting in terms of insurance reimbursement. We're looking at the market and what we expect, generally speaking, a social worker can do in a normal day when you include documentation and follow-up and those types of things. All those activities are related to taking care of a particular client.
Hmm. And you said you have an outpatient counseling department. Mm-hmm. How big is that department?
So it's about, that's a good question. It's probably about 75 FTEs, maybe a little smaller than that.
75 FTEs in just the counseling department.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, counseling, so the mental health and our hospice are our two largest programs. And we have about 100 people in hospice and then about 75 or so in mental health. And then the others are across the rest of the agency.
Wow. That's a very big practice.
Mm-hmm. So my question is, what is the answer? What did you come up with? How many clients can mm-hmm. a person see during the day?
So what we said for mental health is that, and we base our work week on 37 and a half hours a week for full-time status. So we said that out of 37 and a half hours in a week, we expect that they're going to be productive at least 66% of the time. So for a normal full-time person, it translates to like 22, 23 or so clients in a week that they can see. Because the other times we know that they're either in meetings or doing some of that follow-up work, there could be other things that they need to do related, and so they're not going to have those sessions coming in.
So when you say 66%, that's the actual mm-hmm. direct service that
correct.
You're talking about, and the other, whatever that is, 34% is all the other.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
And
we have some people who feel like that's a lot, and we have some people who feel like it's not. I think when we look at interviews and we talk about what utilization looks like, and we're very candid with people to say, look, if you're going to be full-time, we expect that you're going to have a caseload of, let's say, 24 people. And, you know, some of them will say, oh, that's no problem because I'm at such and such place and I've got to see at
right.
least 30.
Right.
Or some of them will say, oh, wow, you know, that's a lot. So typically what we get is that that's no big deal, and then they come here and then I guess they drink the Kool-Aid and then feel like it might be too much.
Well, it depends on what kind of needs your clients have.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, if you work with teens, 22 is a lot because you're working with schools, you're working with families, you know, you're doing a lot of.
Yeah, there's a lot of collateral people that you're working with
right.
there than you might, you know, than otherwise if you're working with adults. Absolutely.
And Jen, do you see a big difference in the compensation for, let's say, the clinicians in the mental health practice versus the hospice care managers?
Actually, so our hospice social workers, on the whole, are earning a little bit more than what our mental health clinicians are earning. Because when we look at competition, we're competing with hospitals, like hospital discharge planners, things like that. And the hospital scale is just higher than what we typically see elsewhere.
Sure.
And what do you pay your therapists, your hospice workers, and your mental health professionals?
So we actually have a scale that we put together depending on their years of experience. So we can employ both clinicians that are in the state of Maryland. They're considered an LM, which means they obtain their Master's of Social Work, and they have their graduate license, but they're not individual practitioners yet, so they receive supervision from us and all. So we have a pay scale for those individuals, and then we have a pay scale for people who actually have received their independent license and then can practice for us. Happy to share I'm happy to share the particulars, the actual numbers, if that's helpful to you guys. I mean, it's sort
yeah.
of based in the DC area, but happy to share that
yeah.
information.
That would be very interesting.
And Jeff,
so we did a grid. Oh, go on. I'm sorry.
Sorry. There's a study. It is a nonprofit salary and benefit report. We,
mm-hmm.
we for example, bought it for our agency. It's a 2015 report. I'm told there's another one that came out after this. But it lists every single job And then it gives like an entire pay scale going from like starting at the 10th percentile, going all the way up to the 90th percentile. And it's actually by region. And it's, you know, what we were trying to do was to make sure that as an agency that we were competitive with all the nonprofits in our area. And so we've worked hard over the last couple of years to make sure that we were bringing all of our staff, for example, to the 50th percentile. And then from there, you know, we've obviously tried to be able to adjust upwards. But I think that this was so, so incredibly helpful. So if anybody is interested in seeing what that's like or finding out if they have a newer version of this report, like I said, I would highly recommend, I would recommend it as a resource.
How do you
is
get
that the hospital and healthcare compensation report?
It, no, it's the nonprofit salary and benefit report.
Okay.
Do you have to purchase that or do you
We did it? Have to purchase it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I don't know if the network can purchase it. I don't know how much it is, but it seems like, you know, it's something that could benefit people if there's something newer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heather, are you speaking? You want to talk?
Yes. Sorry. I had a question for Jen because we also have the graduate level before the licensure. Do you have the same productivity measures for your graduates that require the supervision as you do for your licensed professionals?
Yep, we sure do.
Okay. And you're able to maintain that with even with the supervision time?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, because of the fact that we're setting that initial standard with enough wiggle room, they have essentially 12 or 15 hours, you know, 12 or so hours, maybe a little bit more than that per week. They have enough time for the supervision.
Got it. And your supervisors focus solely on supervision or they also carry a caseload?
We have two different types. So we do have a supervisor level that will carry a caseload and provide some supervision. And so we adjust their caseload based on the fact that they're supervising. Then we also have what we consider to be clinical team leaders where they're only doing administrative work. So they're providing supervision, they're doing the performance evaluations, those types of things.
And you haven't had issues recruiting for that?
For which position? For any of them?
I mean, the supervisors.
No, actually we had some internal people. We've had actually all of our clinical team leaders. We did a major restructuring of our mental health department a couple of years ago. And all of our clinical team leaders were internal folks at the time. We've brought on some additional as we've needed them externally. And then we went through an internal process to see if there are people who wanted to be supervisors. And we were able to promote a few once they received the necessary training to the supervisory role.
Oh, that's great.
You know, Jen, I used to run a JFS agency, and we found it so hard just to hire, you know, oh, yours are all full-time, you said. You have full-time staff.
They're not all full-time. So we have full-time, part-time, and what we call per visit. So we have a combination of all of them. I mean, not to say this, I mean, I'm not being Pollyanna. We definitely have our hiring challenges. We're struggling with trying to staff our Northern Virginia office because it seems that Northern Virginia is just so very different than DC and Maryland. And so, you know, we definitely have our struggles.
Because I was saying, you know, we gave a lot of money to our therapists, you know, $40 an hour, which was higher than most other agencies in the area. And we still couldn't find people because, you know, I guess it just wasn't worth their while. So unless you have full-time employees, and I don't know if that's what everyone has who's on this call, but I think sometimes it's really hard to staff per diem.
Well, and we also have challenges. I mean, we don't necessarily, we have all three, the range, the full-time, the right. part-time, right. and then PRN, if you will. And
it
we've
makes
had-
your life harder.
Right. We've had challenges, you know, anything less than full-time, but we've also had a lot of challenges finding supervisors, clinical supervisors.
Yeah.
We set our per diem rate so that it would compete with private practice.
So you pay $150?
No. In terms of what their share would be, you know, if they were in a, like in a group private practice or something, no. So our, and we actually just increased them, so I don't remember the rates right off the top of my head, but for someone who's committing to working we have two different levels, 10 hours a week, 10 sessions a week or 15 sessions a week. We have two different rates, and I'm just pulling it up in terms of what we're doing. Let's see, for session rates. So for our folks who are working 15 sessions a week who are an LC, they're getting $68. Yeah, they're getting $68 per session. And so when we do a split, you know, if you were looking at, and it's probably a little bit lower than what a group practice would be, we think that's probably in the 75 to maybe 85 or max 90 in terms of the 60-40 split that you typically see in a private practice. We are trying to be competitive with that. For folks who are doing only 10 sessions PRN, we're paying the LC $61 a session.
Wow, that's a lot of maneuvering numbers and figuring out, you know, must be a lot of coding somehow.
So yeah, so we use Ceridian for our HRIS, and so it's a matter of plugging in enough different job codes so they can choose, so the employee can choose whichever level they are. If they're a 10 person session, then they choose a code that says that they're a 10 person session. If they're a 15, then they choose that one.
It's Beth from JFCS again in Southern New Jersey. Do other people pay similar amounts? I mean, we pay way less than that. I mean, like $40 an hour. And so I was just curious, what are you collecting, Jen, per session?
It depends on the carrier. Our rates, we just had a couple rates go up. I think our average is probably in the maybe middle 70s. I'm probably speaking a little bit out of school. I'd have to talk to our director of MHS. I'm trying to remember where we've gone, but it just depends on the carrier. So these rates are specifically for people who are working per visit or per diem or PRN, whatever, however you want to refer to it. So they're not getting the other benefits, and they're not there isn't a lot of overhead to them. So they're coming in, they're agreeing to work a certain number of hours, so they're paid more. But the ones who are full time or part time are getting you know, significantly less per hour because of all the other benefits that they're entitled to.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying for us, we're only bringing in approximately $80 per visit from the insurers. And in my mind, yes, we might be only paying the clinician $40 or so per hour, but we still have all of the other overhead in terms of the front office to be able to, from what we're paying the receptionist, what we're paying for the insurance coordinator. So that's why it seemed like you're losing money on your fee for service based on what I would assume. So that's why I was just trying to better understand your costs and what you were receiving back.
Yeah, we're not losing money on the per visits, but in the other areas, our salaries are as competitive as we can make them for full time and part time, but again, they're significantly less than what the per session salaries are, just because of all of those things that you mentioned. You know, we have to cover all of our indirects.
I have a question in terms of how can you pay $68 per session, add on 7.65% for Social Security and Medicare, and make any money, because that gives you $73 and change at a bare bones cost?
For those individuals, assuming a session is an hour. Right. A session is about an hour, 45 minutes or so to 50 minutes, and they've got to take care of their documentation, so they can wrap up everything related to one particular client in a 1 hour time frame. You know,
it's costing you $73 just to put that person in front of the client.
Right. I may be a couple dollars off on what we're getting in terms of the average from our providers. I don't have that information right off the top of my head. So maybe it's closer to 80. Like I said, I don't have that information right off the top of my head, but it is a tight margin on those particular employees, because like I said, we just don't have some of the overhead costs involved of full-time and part-time. So
Jen, what do you pay a full-time LMSW doing therapy?
So it depends on the number of years of experience. So for an LM for us, let's say they're coming fresh out of school. I'm just opening up my table.
So, wait, I was going to say.
So a brand new person, if they just came out of grad school and they're an LM, we're paying them $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. But I think that your counseling department, no matter what you're paying in all these different configurations, you are making a profit. You're not losing money.
But we are losing money. We subsidize that through philanthropy and other things. No,
so
our counseling department does not stand alone. Correct.
Oh, interesting.
Correct. That is an area that we have to subsidize. There's no, we just don't get, we don't get fair market value for, from insurance companies on the services that we're providing.
Are you a Medicaid provider?
We are in Maryland. We have a very, very small Medicaid population.
And do you subsidize any, are you seeing any clients who are not insured or for whatever reason they have too high a deductible or they?
Yep. We have a sliding, we have a sliding fee scale. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jen,
and what percentage, do you know roughly what percentage of the clients are sliding fee?
It's a very small percentage.
Yeah, so we lose a lot of money here because mm-hmm. we have probably a third of our clients are either Medicaid or sliding scale. And in the sliding scale segment, the average fee is probably $8.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right, yeah, so you're losing quite a bit there.
So Medicaid, I thought, really reimbursed quite high.
No, I mean, certainly not relative to Medicare or private insurance.
Right. Depends on the state. So we can't, we don't take it in Virginia because the reimbursement is just not, it's frankly just not worth the time.
Interesting. So
and are you in, what's the cost of living, Jen? I'm just looking at the 990 and I see mm-hmm. the size of your balance sheet. But mm-hmm. I imagine that the cost of living is high. How far are you from DC?
We're a suburb of DC.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, so people could easily commute. Well, people could commute. I used to commute into DC from my home. Prior to working here. So it's a pretty high cost of living, but you've got people from New Jersey, which I know is a high cost of living and, you know, other areas too.
I feel
so.
Like we have 8 people from New Jersey. How many agencies are in New Jersey?
Oh, how many JFS agencies?
Yeah.
I can count them up. But Florida has the most, I'm pretty sure. So I'll let you know. But Heather, okay.
At least 13 JFSs in New Jersey.
There's 13 JFSs in New Jersey?
I'm counting. I'm
big
counting.
There's a lot of Jews.
Yeah. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think he's right. 9.
Are you worried about competition, Lisa? Are they going to start a network of New Jersey Jewish Human Service agencies?
No, they're all. I don't think they're competitive. I don't really know. Maybe Clifton is with.
No,
TBAC.
Everybody has their own catchment area.
Yeah, they have their own catchment areas.
We have enough cases to go around.
Hmm. Heather, are you still on the call? Because I was thinking you're in Baltimore. Do you have anything similar to what Jen's talking about? Like how large is your mental health counseling? Or do you do something similar?
We have a large mental health counseling, but we also have sliding scale and for the Jewish community, and we take Medicaid as well as private insurances and depending on the programs. So we do have to subsidize some of our mental health. We are not as close to DC, so we're not in as high of a cost of living area.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have the higher costs per session. We don't distinguish like Jen does for her therapists that do per diem or PRN, but we do have different scales for LMs versus LCs.
Mm-hmm. And what about at Rails in Florida, Alana and Stephanie? You have a big counseling department, don't you? You guys there? Maybe not. What about Toronto?
I'm JFS at Home, which is a home healthcare agency, and Alana, who supports JFS, she just stepped out for a moment. So when she comes back, I'll relay the message and see if she can answer that for you.
Okay.
This is Stephanie, by the way.
Stephanie, hi. Do you do the same kind of thing? You know, have different levels of counseling, therapists who work with your clients?
Case managers? Yeah.
So what's going on with you all? How do you manage it? Are you making money? Are you losing money?
Again, I don't support JFS. I support JFS at home. So I don't really, I'm not able to answer that question because I'm not really involved in JFS.
I thought JFS at home, the home care was part of JFS.
It is. It's a separate entity, really. Separate part of it. We have close to about 200 caregivers that we, employ.
And do they all cost the same amount of money? Do you pay them all the same amount?
It varies. I mean, it's for home health care. I mean, we employ CNAs and HHAs as well as youth companions for our clients. And I mean, their hourly employees is anywhere between about $10 to $12 an hour.
Wow. Yeah, that's not a lot of money. Okay, so what about Toronto? What's happening with you over there?
I think we've got a totally, we have a different structure. So we can't bill the insurance like that. So we don't have that structure here in Canada. We have our family services side of the agency. Master's levels make around $50 to $60 an hour, Canadian. We have hospice workers, domestic violence, kind of thing. General counseling, and poverty is our big area right now. It's hard to compare to what you guys are saying because it's very different in the way we don't have that billing rate where we have to do that. We're very much funded through donations and through government and UJA. So all of our money comes through there. We don't have anything coming through an insurance company or sort of those type of premiums.
So do you break even on your counseling or do you make a small profit or do you lose money?
We lose money. We have a foundation that, I mean, we go out. Let me rephrase. We don't lose or make a profit. We fund positions for specific areas. So for example, most recently, we had the needs in the Holocaust area increased. So we had to go out to donors and say, we need to recruit another social worker in order to work with the Holocaust survivors, and they funded that position.
Wow.
So that's how it works. We have to go funding for each position or each area. And so we have positions that are specifically funded by a particular donation or either a grant or however it works.
Okay. That seems pretty hard to do. I don't know. Is that what people do in the States? Fund specific positions? I've never heard of that.
We're unionized also. We're in a unionized environment, so that's a little bit different. I'm not sure who else is in that.
Is Wait. Anyone? I don't think anyone on this call is. That's interesting, right? Yeah. So it's good to have your perspective.
Yeah, and just to understand, our rates for our family services social workers here, so anybody in MMSW, is actually, in terms of the market of Toronto, we pay a lot more than most of the agencies that we're our competitors, and that's because of our CAS. We're also a Children's Aid Society, and the Children's Aid Society of the agency has guided our salary rates. And we're not the highest paying in Toronto. We are the third, but in terms of the family services side, so when you're talking hospice, Holocaust, and general counseling, we are one of the higher paying ones because our grades cannot split the two levels of counselors. So our grids are all one, you're either social worker, and it doesn't matter what side of the agency you're working on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Hillary, I think you're the only one we haven't heard from.
Yeah, I'm kind of zoning out, honestly.
You're what?
I'm trying to do double duty here. I had to answer a quick email, so I apologize. So what was the question, if you could remind me?
Well, we're just talking about compensation and counseling right now.
Yeah, I'm very new here. I've been here not even 2 months yet. But I know that they do get funding and they do accept most medical plans, including Medicaid and Medicare. And that for those that don't have insurance, they work off of sliding scale based on someone's income. So whether they make, I think that on the Medicaid side, as far as I know, it's a break even. And in some instances, if they don't have like 33 cases for each case manager, then it becomes inequitable. You know, they're losing money. It becomes inequitable if each case manager isn't managing 33 cases of Medicaid clients.
Wow.
So, yeah. So for the most part, they are breaking even. Where it becomes problematic is when they hire a new case manager and the case manager has to work up to being able to manage a full caseload of 33 cases. So for like, say, 1 year, they're probably in the rears in making money.
That seems like a lot of cases. Jen, people would be going, what? 33?
Yeah, that's
case managers. I guess, Hillary, I'm questioning, is that a case management function or is that a therapy function?
No, it's a case management function.
Okay. So we have case managers in different groups, and so they may handle up to as many as 50 cases. Because they're not all active, you know, the acuity of some of this, they're relatively stable individuals.
Well, it seems like a lot of management when you have all the different categories that you have, Jen. There's a lot of supervisors. So, Jeff, you started this whole conversation trying to figure out how many people you need in
different
positions.
Sorry, my fault. It's all my fault.
No. But when I think about Jen and all of you, like, you know, how do you make that decision? It's difficult. Like, how many counselors does your supervisor supervise and, you know, and take on clients? Like, I don't know how you make those decisions.
Yeah, I think for us, we have even more complexity because of the nature of our population, because we have such a significant percentage who are Medicaid and or sliding fee scale. Those folks tend to have more complex cases. Yeah. They have less reliable transportation. So are we or are we not charging a cancellation fee? If you're chronically and persistently mentally ill, you forget to tell us that you have changes in your insurance or you forget to call to cancel. And if you're financially insecure, are we going to charge you a cancellation fee that we know you can't pay anyway?
Right.
So I think having that population makes it more complicated. And then to your point about back office, I just have no – we're a little bit just flying blind because – If I have the world's best controller and she's like, oh, I don't need more accountants, I don't know if we are investing enough in the accounting area or not enough, right? It's we need some data.
Right.
To your question, Jeff, I wonder if anybody's using performance measures or for back office. How are other people measuring productivity and efficiency with the back office staff?
It's a great question. We are not doing it, but if somebody's doing it, please.
I'm looking at something we just received from the Andrea Mills, who was from Fiscal Management Association, who was at our conference, the executives conference, and she gave us a key performance indicator chart, and I'm looking at it right now to see if they have all of the key performance indicators for back office as well as, you know, direct service. So I was just looking that up as we're on the phone. I can put that into our affinity group folder if we want. You could look at that.
Great.
Yeah, let me just, I can't close this down. I'm still looking. So I'm looking at the time and we have around 8 minutes left. I didn't know if we want to talk about what we want to talk about next time. Yeah, this is good. I think this is good. I'm going to put it in there. It's a sample key performance indicators chart for all sorts of different fields. So I'll send it to you.
That would be great. Where can I access that folder? I'm sorry.
Okay, so I'm going to email all of you what to do, but basically you go to our website, you go to members only, you put in the password, which everyone has the same one, which is network and then NJHSA18. But anyway, I'll tell you. And then you go to search by affinity group, and then you filter by the affinity group, and this affinity group will be called HR, right? And then you'll find it in there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. So do people have ideas as to what they want us to be talking about?
Is anybody else interested in the topic of culture and core values and what has worked in terms of their staff? I know we explored it before with our COO group, but I didn't know if, from an HR perspective, that there were other things that this group might have to offer and suggest for our agencies.
Yeah, I was thinking along those lines in the sense that, you know, how do you attract talent when, you know, maybe the compensation isn't competitive with a for-profit or other nonprofits and retain that talent?
Okay.
So I know, I know here what they do is they give they're extremely generous with time off. Mm-hmm. But that seems to affect the productivity. And so I was kind of looking for maybe new ideas to attract and retain talent that may be helpful. Just something I've been thinking about.
I would say for me, the opposite end of retention is recruitment. So, you know, what are people using for recruitment tools? You know, whether that's Indeed, LinkedIn, ZipRecruiter, what's working, what's not working?
Okay.
So I would love to know more about the recruitment, what recruitment tools everybody's using, but a little bit further than that, sort of for talent management, are there any tools that anybody's using right now for performance management or talent management or anything around those areas? Because there seems to be a lot in the HR space around that right now.
Okay. We have a firm that had said that they were interested in doing something for the HR affinity group. They had mentioned something about onboarding. I'm not sure that people are interested in that. I know we talked about that at the COO group as well, but I can bring all these ideas back to this group, or we can, if anyone here feels like they have something they want to share with us, that would be terrific, because it's always so good to learn from each other.
Yeah, I would also like to mention a vendor list. I mean, maybe if we can get together and start making a list of, you know, vendors that we use for HRIS systems, performance management, just to see if there's any synergies amongst agencies that we can use.
Okay, so sort of send out a survey saying what vendors do you use for this, that, and the other?
Yeah, I think
sometimes
just seeing that visually that, you know, 10 of us are using, you know, ADP or 9 of us are using this program and seeing, you know, what's best practices in that program. Are we using it to our ability, likes, dislikes?
Well, I think if someone could create whatever that is, we could easily get it out, because I don't know what the different questions are to ask in terms of a vendors list. Do you know what I mean? But I could get it out to all of our HR professionals who then
I will work on that before the next call and push something out to you.
Terrific. Nothing could be better. And we'll do it through a SurveyMonkey so that people can, you know, respond, and then we can aggregate it easily. Good. So anyone else have ideas as to what you think you'd like to see in this group? Jeff?
So I'm just thinking about, we had a very robust conversation about mental health or outpatient counseling. And I don't know that this is the forum, it may be, but is there an affinity group for mental health providers? Because I feel like if we got together, the agencies, and Jen, I'm gonna send you an email separately that I want to get together with you and Wendy to chat. But I wonder if a more robust conversation about all things behavioral health, not just the HR side, would be helpful. And if it's relevant for enough people, we could do it here. But, and I don't want to, Lisa, I don't want to create 6,000 affinity groups. But with 75 clinicians, I mean, I know we can learn stuff from Jen.
Right.
And I'm sure there are many other agencies we can learn from too.
Right. So we have a very robust clinical services affinity group. They're probably
clinical services. Okay.
Right. Clinical services. That's what we called. And one of the first conversations we had in this group, which has met probably around 8 times, not that many, 4 times, 5 times, is what do we call our services? Everyone calls them something different: mental health, behavioral health, counseling, you know, therapy. Like, what's the language? That was something that everyone talked about a lot. Do people have psychiatrists on, et cetera?
So that's interesting, because when we talk about clinical, we include the care managers that are social workers not providing therapy. But that clinical services group is exclusively focused on psychotherapy and psychiatry?
I would say that the majority of people who attend this group are focused on the not case management. Because
Great.
we also have another affinity group.
Of course.
Case management. But there, of course, there's some people who do, I'm sure, that provide case management on that, or, you know.
And who populates that group? Is it mostly the directors of the services? Is it HR people, finance people?
It's mostly the directors of the services, as well as some of the clinicians themselves.
Clinicians themselves. Interesting. So Wendy, we can follow up with Alicia and figure out, because I think we could learn a ton from other places.
Yeah. So my other question to that is, are those sessions recorded? So like maybe we wanted to go listen to 3 or 4 of them and just kind of get a feel for the group.
We've just started recording, because we just got the capacity on our website to somehow put it up, you know. So yes. However, we are not going to be able to keep the recordings forever. Right, because we can't have years worth of recordings for,
sure,
you know, 25 different affinity groups. So you can look and see on the calendar what we've discussed, and then you can go and look at the, or listen to the recording.
Okay.
Right. So what we're discussing on Thursday is something that the COOs already did, which was the Simon Weiss and the outcome measurement. So we're doing that this Thursday, but we've talked about psychiatry and all sorts of different things, which I have some recordings that I can look back and I can see anything would be, you know, important for you all to hear.
Great.
This is Jen. One question I have that might be helpful, similar to the survey around vendors, is what types of services the organizations, these other JFSs, offer? Because I think it's helpful to know, if I've got a question and another JFS offers therapy or mental health or however you want to refer to it, I could reach out to those individuals. And I heard someone on the phone earlier offers home care. We offer home care. I heard someone, I think, offers hospice. I would love to just have a sense of what the other programmatic areas are that each of us work with.
So Jen, that's the biggest challenge that we've had so far, but we think that we just bought Neon. I don't know if you know what that is. It's some sort of software that we are, it's a new database, and it's going to have an opportunity for every agency to have their own page that they're going to input whatever their programs are. And then all of you, everyone who's a member, can go in and look and see, or just type in hospice care, and then the list of agencies will come up that have it. So that's our fantasy and goal that we're hoping will come by the end of 2020. But in the meantime, I know who has home care, and I could send you, I know who's attending the affinity group, so I know what agencies are attending the affinity.
We in Detroit have a big home care operation. We pass through about $2.5 million a year from claims.
Is that skilled home care or unskilled?
Unskilled. Scrambling eggs and tucking people in.
Okay, that's about the size of our group as well.
So, you know, hopefully we will have all that information, because I know people want that, but we don't have it right now. So, yeah.
Okay.
But at
home, glad it's on someone's radar. That's helpful.
Yeah. Good. Jeff's on your radar. Or you're on his. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to have to end now, but our next call is not until March 3rd. So, you know, put that down, 1 o'clock, March 3rd, and we'll send an invitation. But in the meantime, we are going to be having webinars that may interest you educationally, the whole, you know, network. So be on the lookout for that as well. And, you know, we'll go from there. And if you think of someone that you'd like to hear, or you know someone that you think would be give us a good webinar, then let me know and I'll set it up with them for the whole network. Right? In the meantime, because we have 4 months.
Thanks, Lisa. Really appreciate it. And thank you to everybody who joined. I'm really excited about getting connected to all of New Jersey, but DC too and Toronto. It's great. I'm really excited about it.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank you.
So everyone have a great day. Try to stay warm during this freeze.
And Baltimore too, sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you. And Florida.
Okay. Yeah. The whole country. The world. You got to get Australia on the phone next time. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, Jeff. Bye, everyone. Bye.